All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, speaking to you from New York City on this, the 13th day of July, 2021. And we do want to thank all of you for listening to the show, making it one of the more popular shows on the Voice America Business Channel. And I want to invite you all to send whatever questions, comments, criticisms, whatever you might have to say about our show, send them along to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. Questions, the number four, taylor@gmail.com. We also want to thank our sponsors for making this show. Without them, there would be no show. Our sponsors this week are Noble Resources, Eloro Resources, Irving Resources, Hannon Metals, Labrador Gold Corp, Lion One Metals, SK Mining Corp, NV Gold Corp, and Firefox Gold. I've titled today's show, Between a Rock and a Hard Place, Can the Fed Escape? Dr. Quentin Henning, Patrick Highsmith, and Alistair McLeod return as guests for today's show. With foreigners no longer buying U.S. Treasuries, the Fed finds itself between a rock and a hard place. Either it stops printing money and allows interest rates to rise to their free market levels so that investors will buy treasuries to fund the U.S. multi-trillion dollar annual deficits, or the Fed will have to continue hyperinflating the supply of dollars as it creates them out of thin air. If the Fed allows the markets to work and rates to rise, it would crash the U.S. financial markets and send the country into a depression, the likes of which have not been seen in the U.S. since the 1930s. And so we can be almost 100% sure that the Fed will kick the can down the road by continuing to print enormous amounts of money that is already threatening to send the U.S. economy into an inflationary spiral. The folks who believe inflation is a temporary problem were certainly dealt a blow today with a 5.4% CPI statistic that was reported. This is the highest U.S. rate of inflation reported in the U.S. for the last 30 years. So we can be pretty certain that the dollar's purchasing power will continue to be destroyed at an accelerated rate. But how will stock, commodity, and housing prices respond? Those and more questions will be asked of Alistair during the second half of today's show. Hope for offsetting a loss of purchasing power comes in the form of owning gold and silver, of course, and owning the companies that discover and produce those metals and other commodities. So I'm happy to tell you that Patrick Highsmith will be with me to update us on Firefox Gold's very exciting gold exploration program in Finland. Patrick will be with me right after the first commercial break. But now I'm happy to tell you that Dr. Quentin Henning is with us right now to provide an update on Lion One Metals. That's a company that is developing a very exciting high-grade alkaline gold project in Fiji. Lion One trades in Toronto, LIO is a symbol, and the U.S. LOMLF, 156 million shares, $1.13 Canadian money earlier today when I last checked it, giving it a market cap of around $176 million. Well, thank you, Dr. Quentin Henning, and thank you so much for being with us again to update us on 2 of 2. You are a technical advisor to the company and very much in tune with this company and its alkaline style project. So thank you for joining us again.
Absolute delight, Jay.
Well, you know, Lion One, like many companies, but I think Lion One maybe more than many, was sort of delayed with the COVID virus. It sort of set it back more than some others. But now the news is starting to flow once again from the company's Tuvatu project. Well, with some pretty impressive drill results on July 7th, they reported them. Can you give us an update on what these latest drill results mean and perhaps a bigger picture of what the company is doing? I know they have a three-tier approach. There's three different drill programs going on simultaneously, essentially. So could you give us an update on the latest results and what they mean?
Certainly. Look, I'm going to set the stage by talking about the three tiers you mentioned. The company does have six rigs operating on site right now. The rigs include two deep capacity surface rigs. These can drill holes in excess of 1 kilometer deep. So they're testing targets, deep targets underneath the Tuvatu resource, but also going to be testing deep targets under new areas that we've identified, namely Banana Creek, which is about 3.5 kilometers northeast of Tuvatu. We're gonna go out and kind of hunt lions, you know, big or elephants, I guess is a better term. Hunt elephants in the big picture here. We want to find the deep rooted structures that we've identified by CSAMT. Test those, see if we can't find some more high grade feeders. All right, so that's one tier. Second tier of drilling, shallow infill rigs. Two shallow surface rigs are doing infill drilling around the Tuvatu resource. That drilling is geared towards identifying areas for upcoming mining. The company is now moving the project towards production. I think the additions they've made here recently with staff, you can see that they're very serious about building a mine at Tuvatu. So those rigs are going to be working on an ongoing basis to infill critical areas ahead of that mine plan. The last two rigs are underground rigs. They're rigs that are capable of doing infill around the Tuvatu resource, but also reaching down and testing some of the deep areas underneath the existing Tuvatu resource, tapping those high-grade structures that were identified beginning last year. All right, so we have those three tiers, deep surface rig, two shallow surface rigs, and then two underground rigs that are all going to be working in concert to undertake aggressive exploration throughout the remainder of this year. Now, the results. We have some significant results from the deeper part of the system here recently. In this last news release, there were two notable intercepts that really tell us that the system is alive and well at depth. We have 6 meters grading 9.11 gram per ton gold, beginning at about 444 meters downhole depth in hole 526. And then we have a 2.15 meter intercept grading 17.7 gram per ton gold at a depth of 505 meters, 0.65 downhole depth in hole 528. Now, what do these mean? They're not just one-off random intercepts. These are actually testing very sizable extensions of known loads in this system. So we're reaching down and we're testing, aggressively testing extensions at depth of these loads, and we're finding them. We're actually able to identify and hit these things. What it means, to put it in perspective, the Tuvatu resource delivers about maybe 2,500 to 3,000 ounces per vertical meter. Mm-hmm. So by poking some holes down deep underneath the existing resource, you can start to see that the picture is going to grow dramatically as we go down below. And that's going to improve even more so as they get into mining, put the decline down, other access in to drill from. We will be able to grow this deposit significantly over the coming years. It's really a good news story, you know, but I don't want to de-emphasize the work that they're doing, that we're doing elsewhere on the property. I think by the end of this year, you're going to see that one deep capacity rig that's testing these new targets, Banana Creek included. I think they'll deliver some exciting results, and we should see, we'll call it the next Tuvatu, and the next Tuvatu, you know, we'll see the whole thing kind of come together and crystallize for investors.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are deep systems, aren't they, Quentin? They come up to surface. Obviously, the mining that is planned is right at or near surface. But I guess once you're able to mine, you can keep drifting down into this into these high grade sections. Do you have a sense of what sort of widths you might be looking at, mining widths, or is it too early to know?
Look, these deposits generally deliver high grade, but albeit somewhat narrow. Vein, you know, we don't call them veins, we call them lodes. The reason we call them lodes is because if you look at the mineralization, what it is it's a fracture zone about a meter or 2 meters wide, something like this. in which innumerable little tiny fractures contain a very, very high-grade gold.
Mm-hmm.
They're persistent for long lengths along strike, but as you said, to depth, these things go for who knows how far. They go down and down and down. These are not shallow epithermal systems. They're deep-rooted. They're basically created by magmas. You know, think of this as the throat of a volcano, okay? And somewhere down in the ground below this was a magma chamber, you know, the mothership that was generating the fluids that produce these deposits. And as that magma chamber cooled and solidified, crystallized, the elements like gold, which really can't find a home in most rock-forming minerals, those metals get flushed out, and they get flushed upwards into the fractures mm-hmm. in the ground above. So, you know, we're talking about a lot of runway at depth. The mines that come to mine, like Cripple Creek here in Colorado, is, I think, on the order of 1,300 meters. The Porgera deposit, I believe, is at least that deep, if not deeper, you know, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of examples of very deep alkaline systems, all very high grade.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news here is that Lion One, I believe, has permission to go ahead and start producing or to at least build a mine, right?
They're fully permitted, yes. They are fully permitted for production.
Right, and so that means that if they were just a junior that had to do all this deep drilling to prove up a deposit, it would be difficult and costly, but Lion One can actually start producing and then just continue to ramp down into this high-grade deposit.
That is correct. Yes, the company is laying plans to go into production, like I said, and they've hired the staff to do it here recently. Like, they have great staff to begin with, but the recent additions, you know, Patrick Hickey, for example, I've known for many years. He worked at Newmont about the same time I did. He knows how to build mines. That's his specialty. He built mines. He built the Batu Hijau deposit in Indonesia for Newmont. He built Mbatabi for Sumitomo Corporation mm-hmm. in Madagascar. You know, so he knows how to how to build mines on islands. How about that?
Yeah, well, that's really important. And so the excitement here, as you pointed out before, these alkaline systems, and this is on a there are a bunch of potential targets here. You talk about Banana Creek, I think, is the one you're looking at next. But if I recall, there's several more of these systems that you're seeing evidence of on surface, right?
That's correct. Look, the corridor, the overall corridor, is about 7 kilometers across. We can see the alteration. We can see the signature of the potassium alteration from geophysical work. We've done CSAMT, which is an electrical technique looking at structures in the ground, and we can see large-scale structures, deep feeder structures, all the way up through that corridor. So we're going to start up at the northeast end, which is Banana Creek, but we'll gradually test areas in between Banana Creek and Tuvatu, but then we'll also chase the system southwest of Tuvatu, where we can see, again, deep-rooted structures underneath places like Ursa Creek and targets, you know, at the southern end of the caldera. It's an amazing system. These systems tend to generate many millions of ounces. The nearby neighbor, Vaticola has an endowment of 11 million ounces. I think it's produced around 7 million ounces. It has resources and reserves of another 4. These are absolutely prolific systems that make great mines. I think this will be one of them.
How long are we going to have to wait for assays? I mean, is there an assay delay here for this company?
No, there is not. The company has its own analytic lab in Nandi, which is the major city that's nearby the project. The samples are cut. They're logged and then cut within, say, 3-4 days. The samples are delivered to the lab, and then it takes another 2 or 3 days to get assays. So, you know, on the order of a week. And there's no delays right now from COVID. There was a shutdown inside the country for about, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks in late April and May. That's passed. Even though the COVID numbers, the number of documented cases has gone up here recently, they have not shut the country down again. The company has definitely taken every necessary protocol to make sure the workers are safe, the communities around this area are safe. But right now, it's all systems go. They can analyze samples quite quickly. Anything that tends to run over a certain threshold, say a gram per ton. They ship those samples over to Brisbane, to ALS in Australia, and get a repeat assay to check. So, you know, they have a really good protocol in place. Everything's checked out. The repeat assays have checked out consistently. And, you know, it's one of the most delightful stories I'm working with, because the assay, you know, bottleneck is not an issue here. I wish I had my own assay lab elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is it's been a problem with COVID and all of that, but well-funded, are they? Lion One is in good shape to carry out its program this year?
Correct, yeah. Look, the company threw a raise last August, and then through exercise of warrants in September. They have a treasury around $60 million right now, which is plenty of money to firstly undertake the exploration, but also to get going with this this mine plan that they have. So the company, you know, has really got, you know, enough critical mass now, cash wise and people wise and so forth, that it's all systems go.
What is your hunch? Does the company have a target date? Have they made it public when they might like to start producing?
They haven't announced anything formally. I think there's been, you know, press around it in Fiji in particular, where, you know, obviously they want to see economic development. Mm-hmm. Talking around, you know, a couple year time frame. I would say, you know, my gut says that that's possible, but the official timeline has not yet been set. Yeah. I think once the new people get in place and they can kind of assess the situation, assess the logistics of getting the mine up and going, I think we'll have a better picture of exactly how long this will take. Lots of work to be done, by the way. You know, this is going to be the first time I'm working on a project where you have intensive exploration drilling in conjunction with development. I mean, mm-hmm. you can say that at Beaton's Creek, but we actually had drilled out Beaton's Creek, mm-hmm. Then picked up the mill. So,
yeah,
now we're going back and drilling more, obviously. But in this case, this is going to be interesting to watch the company grow, you know, kind of catalyze itself and go from an exploration-only company to a small producer.
Right. And the two seem to go together in this case. With the people that have been brought aboard, the ability to mine at depth and continue going down. You know, juniors, as I say, juniors to spend huge amounts of money to prove up enormous amounts of gold. It's very expensive. But in this case, if everything works out, you'll be able to produce and cash flow, develop, and grow organically internally. It's really quite a story, Quentin. Anything else?
That pretty much sums it up. I would look for a steady stream of news out of the company. Yeah. Now that everything's up and going, we should have a long stream of assay results from all these rigs that are going.
Terrific. Well, thank you very much, Quentin, for giving us this update. It's excellent. Thank you so much. Well, folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away. Patrick Highsmith will be with me. And when he comes back, he'll be telling us about the exciting drill results and program that's going on with Firefox's project in Finland. Another very exciting story you won't want to miss, so don't go away. We'll be right back with Patrick Highsmith.
Firefox Gold is actively exploring in Finland, where recent discoveries have sparked a new gold rush. Firefox controls a major portion of a prospective gold belt, giving the company a distinct advantage for exploration and strategic partnerships. The company's strong international leadership team, combined with its Finland-based exploration specialists, will put Firefox on the crest of the coming wave of gold discoveries. Firefox Gold trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol FFOX. Go to firefoxgold.com to subscribe for updates.
SK Mining Corp, trading under the symbol ESK on the TSX Venture and ESKYF on the OTCQB, is a mineral exploration company targeting precious metals, rich VMS deposits in the heart of British Columbia's Golden Triangle. SK Mining controls a prospective land package totaling 130,000 acres, which lies across a geologic trend that once hosted the prolific SK Creek Mine. With a world-renowned geological team, funding in place, and shareholders such as Eric Sprott, SK Mining is on the cusp of a world-class discovery. Go to skmining.com to subscribe for updates.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm pleased to have with me once again Patrick Highsmith. He is the chairman of Firefox Gold Corp. That is a sponsor to this show and a company that I follow closely in my newsletter and one that I personally hold shares in. Patrick has a distinguished career as a geologist, having worked with major mining companies like Rio Tinto, BHP Billiton, and Newmont. He has worked on more than 250 projects around the world through his career. Like some other experienced geoscientists, Patrick is using his talents that he accumulated over the years to help a smaller exploration company to find the big deposits that major companies have to rely on. Before I say hello to Patrick, I should tell you, Firefox trades in Toronto under the symbol FFOX, and you can buy it down in the States, as I have, under FFOXF. 99.5 million shares outstanding, giving it a market cap around $30 million right now. Patrick, thank you so much for joining me again.
Well, thank you, Jay. It's great to be with you.
It's really good to have you with us. Just for the sake of those who may not be familiar with the Firefox story, can you quickly tell us why Firefox Gold has chosen to be active in Finland? Not only are you active there, but you've really picked up a big chunk of ground.
That's right, Jay. We built Firefox in 2017 to be entirely targeted on Finland. Our CEO, Carl Lofberg, is based in Finland. Most of our team is based in Finland. And the reasons for that, Jay, when you're doing exploration for gold, you go where the gold is.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, geologically, that really comes first. But here have a special circumstance. There's a greenstone belt in northern Finland with one major gold mine operated by Agnico Eagle, and now a second major discovery by Rupert Resources. But it's really underexplored, Jay. So geologically, of course, we want to go to places with a high probability of success and the right rocks. But let's not forget, I mean, Finland's a great place to work. It's one of the most stable governments in the world. It is among the lowest in the world in corruption. The infrastructure is spectacular. We have paved highways and international airports north of the Arctic Circle, crisscrossing our properties. We have paved highways and power lines. And also, the mining law, quite frankly, is transparent, well-structured, and easy to understand in both Finnish and English. So it's a great place to explore as well, Jay.
You know, I have to start out really by asking you about your June 17th announcement. Spectacular assay that you reported, 93.88 grams per ton of gold over 1.35 meters on their Mustajärvi project in Finland. I know that is probably the one that's most advanced project, but aside from the drill hole intersections and that exceptionally rich grade, what can you tell us about what you know about this Mustajärvi project, and what are your plans for the for that target?
Yes, Jay, we just announced those new high-grade intercepts at Mustajärvi in mid-June. So we are right now developing our strategy to follow up on that. And I just want to point something out. It's quite significant, we believe, when you encounter what we call bonanza-grade gold on an exploration project. And bonanza grade is an old term, Jay. It's actually kind of an informal term, but it's been defined as deposits containing more than about 34 grams per ton or veins containing more than about 34 grams per ton or 1 ounce per ton.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the World Gold Council also goes so far as to define a high-quality underground mine as those averaging 8 to 10 grams per ton.
Mm-hmm.
So when we intersect something like 1.35 meters of 93.88 grams per ton, clearly that's a bonanza-grade vein, and we need to understand more about it. These high-grade deposits can be quite spectacular if that's the nature of the mineralization that eventually becomes a mine. Or maybe they're indicating, the top of a system where maybe the grades are lower at depth, but there's thicker intercepts mm-hmm. of them. So we have a number of questions to address, Jay. Is there a lot more of the bonanza grade, in which case our ultimate target is an underground mine with these sorts of excellent grades? Or do we need to test the roots of this system? Some textures in this rock look like we might be in the epizonal or more shallower portions of the deposit. So right now, the team's gathering in Finland and reviewing a lot of core and looking at a lot of data, and we're sort of determining in our 2021 and 2022 drilling what are the next steps. Obviously, there will be close step-outs around this bonanza grade uh-huh. intercept, Jay. Uh-huh. There are several other bonanza grade intercepts along this stretch of at least 1.5 kilometers of the structure that we've already identified. So more drilling is coming. Some of those will be quite close step-outs uh-huh. around that high grade to really nail it down and see if that's the best or is there even better grade down there. But we'll also be testing these clusters of other grade along the structure because, as you know, we have more assays still coming on this property. We've only seen the results from 3 holes out of the 11 that we just drilled.
Well, we're going to be watching closely for them, that's for sure. And then also be interested in when you talk more about your drill plans, I suppose you'll be making an announcement in that regard. This project, Mustard Jarvie, is certainly not the only project. I guess it's the most advanced so far, but you are expecting to have 4 drill ready projects by September. Can you talk a little bit about the other prospects that you're going to be working on?
Of course. We are, as you pointed out, a large holder of tenements in Lapland. We have about 800 square kilometers of prospective ground. And Mustajärvi's been with us since the beginning. It's fully permitted and drill ready. And as we've said, we've got a lot more drilling to do there. But we will have, by late summer or September, a total of 4 projects that are drill ready. Jay, we've now drilled on 3 of them. The 4th one called Sarvi is coming very soon. The market's sort of watching that one because it adjoins Rupert's discovery at Area 1. And so we see it as a bit of a pipeline of projects, Jay, and there's a logic for that. Sure, we've hit gold on more than one property. We've got anomalies on these several that I've just been talking about. But in an emerging belt like this, we don't know where the next discovery is coming from, quite frankly. So having a lot of land is often the way that a major company plays these belts. But here in Lapland, there are only about 4 juniors and 2 majors that control the whole belt. And we're one of those major players, Jay. And we're the only one, by the way, that doesn't have a major investment from a strategic shareholder like another mining company or a joint venture partner. So Firefox shareholders own 100% of our potential, and we have something like 11 total projects, 4 of which will be drill-ready by late summer.
And a market cap, as I said, of only around $30 million in Canadian money. Well, this Sarvi project is right next to Rupert's discovery. Could you talk a little bit about that? And do you think it may be a continuation of Rupert, or is it similar geology? What's the story there?
Absolutely. Our Sarvi project has been showing up in our presentation and on our maps for some time. But, of course, mechanized exploration isn't allowed in Finland until the permits are granted. So we've done geophysics there. We've done till sampling, the sort of things that aren't obtrusive or don't disturb much ground. So the permit process has been through its hearing. We know that permit is coming very soon, perhaps within the next month. So what's significant about it, Jay, is not just its location, but in our business, we look for analogs to other successful projects and major discoveries. So just as Mustajärvi is in a very similar setting to Rupert's discovery, similar rocks along a major structure, and we see the same sort of chemistry, gold going with bismuth and tellurium. So that's one thing that got us excited about Mustajärvi, was it has similarities. Here at Sarvi, not only do we see similar volcanic rocks immediately along Rupert's northern boundary, but we also see these important cross structures, Jay. They were late in the gold forming process. They may have hosted a lot of the gold forming process, and we geologists refer to them in Finland as the D3 structures, mm-hmm. meaning the third deformation event. So those structures cross-cut Rupert. We can see them in the magnetics, and they actually come up and extend onto the Sarvi property as interpreted from our airborne magnetics. So now we have similar rocks, some of the same structures coming onto our ground. And the sampling we have been able to do without doing mechanized exploration has yielded some gold anomalies in the glacial sediments that cover everything. Jay, remember, in this part of Finland, you can't just walk out and break off a piece of rock. Usually it's covered by a few meters of glacial sediments. And so we sample the till. And as we've reported previously, in our samples of some of the till along some of those structures, we've identified over 100 little micro nuggets of gold that the glaciers have moved around. Uh-huh. So that means there's some gold kicking around somewhere, usually from not too far away. So at Sarvi, immediately we will begin with some more mechanized forms of till sampling. We've already done more geophysics even this year, and we'll be honing in on targets to see if we can find more analogs to the drilling by Rupert at Ikkari, which is less than 5 kilometers away to our south, Jay. So we're pretty encouraged about Sarvi.
Yeah, indeed. And beyond your four drill-ready projects that you're looking to begin drilling on and continuing to drill on, I think something like 800 square kilometers that you have, you've got your team out there looking for new targets beyond those four.
Absolutely right. While we'll be drilling on probably all four of the properties during the winter of 2021 and 2022, Jay, on the earlier stage properties, we are conducting till sampling. We're conducting airborne magnetics over those properties. Some of these, like our Kolho property, which is just northeast of Rupert and east of the Sarvi area we were just talking about, is a huge property, 150 square kilometers in one property. We've got a huge till sample database from the Geological Survey of Finland, which we have paid to have reanalyzed for gold for the first time. So that database has now just been generated. So now we know where there are historic anomalies to go visit. Huge property like that, no drilling that we know of along these structures, and a very similar setting to the setting that led to the Ikkari discovery. So that's just one of the big properties. And some of these adjoin Agnico Eagle's mine property to the north near the Kittila mine, and others are along the famous Serka Break, one of the major through-going structures that controls the gold in this part of the world. So really prospective portfolio, and geologists are using the midnight sun in Finland right now to get out there prospecting on those.
Yeah, indeed. Long days up there. Well, just to summarize now, we're just about out of time. How well funded are you to carry out your program this year? And then maybe just give our listeners an idea of what sort of share price drivers that people should keep their eyes on going forward.
Yes, Jay, that's the best part of the story, frankly. After our oversubscribed financing that we closed in, I guess it was early June, we don't need money for quite a long time now, Jay. We have well over $3 million in the bank. We have a lot of in-the-money warrants that, if things continue to go well, could easily translate to doubling or tripling the treasury from where it is now. So with that sort of the excitement of having the pressure off the stock, when you're in a tough market and people know you need to finance, now people can look for execution from Firefox. And so we have about 10,000 meters of drilling planned, Jay, over the next 12 to 18 months. That'll go up and down depending on results, of course. So a lot of news flow. And as I said, 8 more drill holes coming from the Bonanza Grade Mustajärvi property. Those will be coming out over the summer. And we'll also be reporting on the earlier stage exploration, sort of intermingled with that. This is the busy field season to get ready for drilling again, Jay, which will start in about September or October. And then we go right through the winter again, just as we did last year. So Firefox is in a great situation. No need to finance anytime in the foreseeable future. And a heck of a pipeline of projects with a lot of drill targets looming.
All right. Very exciting. We'll have to leave it go at that, Patrick. Thank you so much for spending time with us and updating us on this very exciting story. We'll look to do it again sometime in the not-too-distant future, hopefully. Well, folks, don't go away, because Alistair MacLeod will be with me right after the commercial break to talk about the dilemma the Federal Reserve has gotten itself into and what will that mean for the financial markets. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Alistair MacLeod.
Lion One Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barakoff.
Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
Labrador Gold is an exploration company focused on its flagship Kingsway project, located in Central Newfoundland Gold District. Labrador Gold's first phase drilling program has successfully identified high-grade gold mineralization, including a 3.6-meter intercept, grading 20.6 grams per ton gold, and 1.85 meters, grading 50.38 gram per ton gold. The company has approximately $35 million in the treasury and is led by a world-class team of CEO Roger Moss and technical advisors Sean Ryan and Quentin Henney.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Alistair McLeod. Alistair writes a very insightful weekly letter every Thursday. You can go to Gold Money, go to the research page at goldmoney.com to download Alistair's latest thoughts on the markets, and they are very weighty thoughts, and I think he really delves into the nuts and bolts and, you know, what the underlying dynamics are. And so if you really care about not just what is happening, but why things are happening, so you can sort of understand and plan for the future, I think this is really, it's a must read for me, and I think any serious investor that understands free market economics would see it that way. I've titled today's show, Between a Rock and a Hard Place, Can the Fed Escape the Trap It's In? And what I mean by a rock and a hard place is that the Fed has put itself in a no-win situation by meddling in the capital markets to an ever-increasing degree ever since Nixon removed gold from the dollar in 1971. By printing money, the Fed has enabled the U.S. to run chronic budget and trade deficits that have now left the U.S. essentially bankrupt, especially since interest rates are negative in real terms. Until recent years, the Fed could depend on the net export nations recycling their dollars that they earn from the United States back into the U.S. treasuries to fund U.S. debt. But given negative real interest rates, virtually all the serious foreign purchasers of U.S. treasuries have now come to an end. To pretend that all is well, the Fed now is in a position of having to buy the lion's share of new treasury debt in order to keep interest rates from rising and equity prices elevated. They need to keep elevated equity prices elevated, more important than ever, because thanks to interest rate suppression over the years, investors of all stripes have had to buy risky stocks rather than safe U.S. treasuries to gain reasonable returns. And as a result of that financial repression, the real economy, the productive sector, has been getting weaker and weaker, while the financial sector continues to experience the benefits of inflation, allowing the rich to get richer as the middle class seems to be heading towards extinction. The logical answer, the right answer, to fund America's debt would be to let interest rates rise to the level that the Fed would not have to go out and print money to fund it. The market would buy it. That's what Paul Volcker did in 1980, and it brought us decades of prosperity. For reasons that Alistair can explain for sure, I'm sure he can, the Fed can no longer do that. And because the Fed can no longer allow markets to allocate financial resources, we run the risk of a major inflationary problem. To help us understand that again, I'm really pleased that Alistair is with us. Thanks for joining us again, Alistair.
That's my pleasure, Jay.
It's always good to have you. And before we get into this between the rock and a hard place topic that the Fed finds itself in, I would like to ask you, since you've talked about Basel III and the potential for that to disrupt or to provide some upside for the gold and silver markets, we find out that Britain has exempted the clearing banks from those regulations. What do you think? Why do you think they did that? And what do you think the repercussions, if any, will be that they are not allowing those Basel restrictions to go into effect?
Well, firstly, the Basel restrictions are going into effect. Let's make that clear. The objective of the net stable funding ratio, which is the, if you like, the main thing in this Basel III, is to do away with risky assets on the balance sheet of banks being financed by short-term deposits. So that is the overall objective. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely clear that the message that the Bank of International Settlements got from the G20 is they've got to get the banking sector out of this enormous pile of derivatives. I mean, we're talking about, what, $580 trillion nominal of derivatives.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to look at it in that light. Now, what they have done, as you know, America and the European Union are now regulated by Basel III. That actually happened at the beginning of this month, or in the EU's case, the end of the last month. So that's happened. The UK is going to adopt these regulations at the beginning of next year, January the 2nd, 2022 mm-hmm. is the actual date. Now, the PRA, which is the regulator within the Bank of England that deals with banks, has adopted all the Basel III regulations, so far as I can see. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly where they matter. There is one exception, and that is a clause which is Article 428F, if you really want to know the details, paragraph mm-hmm. 1, which permits the operation of the London Precious Metals Clearing Limited and its owners to continue acting as a central counterparty following the introduction of the net stable funding rules. And it is subject to the Prudential Regulatory Authority granting permission to each of the banks involved with it. Now, these are the four big banks. Mm-hmm. From memory, they are JP Morgan, HSBC, Standard Chartered, and UBS. Those mm-hmm. four banks can do it. Now, they're very, very strict criteria behind this rule change. And basically what it means is that the only thing that they can acting as a central counterparty, is just to clear the market's trades. Mm-hmm. Now, every day, the unallocated balances will clear. They clear anyway, because yeah. you've got a buyer and a seller, so they clear.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The only time where there is something different is where there is a delivery involved. Mm-hmm. But that, again, clears a buyer and a seller, but it clears it not by scrubbing one off against the other, but by delivering gold itself.
Right. Okay?
So that is the extent of the derogation that the LBMA has. Mm-hmm. The second part of 428F, the second paragraph, actually says how member banks of the LBMA can actually trade in future. Mm-hmm. And it's rather like this. Effectively, the Bank of England has said, you can continue to trade, but no derivatives. Mm-hmm. And I mean, almost as blunt as that.
Uh-huh.
So they have got to do, if a bank wants to offer a service, an unallocated account service, or even an allocated account service. Allocated is slightly different because that's off balance sheet, but an unallocated gold service to its customers, then it has to have on the asset side of its balance sheet real physical gold to match.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
And that's new.
This is new. So right. What this is doing is it is changing the LBMA forward market from a derivative market to a physical market.
Mm-hmm.
This is a major, major implication, which nobody really seems to me to have picked up.
they don't seem to have picked it up. If I see people on the internet basically saying, oh, yeah, much ado about nothing. That McLeod doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm sure.
Well, that may be true, but I'm not going to admit to it.
Well, if you can be sure, if I thought that was true, I wouldn't have you on this show so often.
Oh, that's very kind.
So, but no, that's very interesting, and that's very important. Then that is new, and it hasn't had an impact yet, but is likely to longer term, I would think.
Yes, I mean it's difficult to judge the impact. I mean, the first thing I would say is that without the ability to print unallocated gold out of thin air, if I can put it that way, this market is going to become more volatile. That is for sure, and I think any commentator would agree with that. The other thing, which I don't think people have paid much attention to, is that the reason these markets, both forwards and futures, have been allowed, if you like, by the deep thinkers in the States to expand is they absorb demand for gold and silver and platinum group metals that would otherwise go into the physical and drive the price of physical higher. Right, so the next question is the replacement of the forward derivatives with physical metal, what's that going to do to demand for physical metal? Now, we don't get any useful statistics out of the LBMA, but if we go to the Bank of International Settlements, they tell us at half-yearly intervals what the outstanding forwards and swaps in gold are. And the end of December last year, the total outstanding was $530 billion. Now, at the price at the time, that translates into 8,675 tons of gold.
Wow.
Now, I would certainly not claim that all the people who, sort of hold forward positions in the London gold market would continue to deal. I mean, I can't claim that at all. But I can say two things. I think there will be an element who will want to own gold or exposure to gold as opposed to exposure to dollars or euros or sterling. And so consequently, they will want to hold gold. Now, I have been talking to a number of people in the market, and I understand that even now, if you are a very large trader, very large dealer, very large fund, you could probably negotiate a figure of less than 10 basis points to maintain an allocated account through a bullion bank in the London market. So this basically, it seems to me what's going to happen is that the replacement of physical for forward deals is likely to lead to at least, and I think it's probably a reasonable assessment, at least half that 8,675 tons being demanded in London to replace them. So this is going to create demand for physical gold. Now, at what price this is likely to be supplied in the market remains to be seen.
Sure.
But you see that this is a very, very important development.
Very, very significant. Yeah, because a lot of people think they own gold when they just own the paper gold, and they're not even aware, I think, that they're not really owning the real thing. So
correct. Correct. The other thing which is interesting is the potential effect on ETFs. I mean, the ETFs like GLD, for example, if you have got bullion banks in London pushing an allocated service or what amounts to an allocated service or call it a pooled service, if you like, then, at a figure, say, between 10 and 20 basis points, depending how big you are, this is considerably cheaper than owning ETFs where you've got, all the fees of a structure, including the management fees and so on and so forth. So, that's going to be an interesting effect on the ETF market. So all in all, I wouldn't dismiss this change. I think it is very important. Now, the reason that it is being introduced this way is that the banking community, if I can call it that, in the UK has to have time to adjust, you know, their let's say their treasury policies and their business plans for the new regulations. So what they're getting is pretty well finalized regulations presented 6 months early, so that they can plan for mm-hmm. this event.
Oh.
So that's why the whole thing is working the way it is. But I think this is major and very interesting. And, you know, on a net basis, I see it as being really quite positive for the gold price and also, of course, for the silver price.
Yeah. And what about some of the other commodities? Not so much, perhaps. Copper and those things tend to be not so much paper markets as they are actual physical markets, I think.
Well, that's true, but you don't have, if you like, a formal forward market such as the LBMA,
yes. uh-huh.
but you do have futures, for example,
yes. Yes.
And that's going to be subject to exactly the same rules. So I think that, you know, the paper liquidity in general for all commodities, and particularly energy commodities, which is another consideration,
mm-hmm.
You know, the liquidity is going to contract, I think, quite sharply, which mm-hmm. which again is likely to have an effect on the commodity markets, driving prices higher.
Interesting. Well, I thank you very much for that clarification, Alistair, because there's a lot of confusion out in the markets and a lot of people that were sort of licking their chops hoping to see an instant spike up in gold prices. It didn't happen, but I think you've explained it very well. Thank you for that. Well, with the remaining time that we have, and there's not a whole lot left, let's talk about the Fed between a rock and a hard place. In your June 17th missive titled Too Much Liquidity, you stated, and I quote, "Yesterday, the FOMC released its June statement, which only served to remind us that its members are powerless in the face of inflation conditions. They refuse to accept the price consequences of monetary inflation, still clinging on to an increasingly untenable hope that price rises are transitory," end of quote. Now, I notice, Alistair, that you know, the Treasury markets have gotten stronger. Interest rates have been going down recently, the last couple of weeks anyway, prompting some people like Jim Rickards and others to say, well, no, I think maybe it is transitory. Can't you see what's happening? Treasuries wouldn't be going up in value and interest rates down if we were heading towards inflation. What do you say to that argument?
Well, I think trying to equate economics with the market is not the best way to look at it. I mean, the fact of the matter is that this inflation spike has been front run by traders in the market.
Mm-hmm.
They knew it was coming, so they drove the yields on, let's say, the 10-year, for example, up. And so you've had a quite natural reaction, and it actually came back to the 200-day moving average and has since then bounced from about 1.29%. I think we're currently about 1.39 or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's definitely bounced somewhat. But the problem that the Fed has, I mean, you're right, it is a rock and a hard place, because between its QE, which is, you know, since last October, it's round about a short trillion, if you like, has been pushed into financial markets. And on top of that, you've had spending from the government drawing down on its general account to the tune of about a further $1 trillion. So you've had $2 trillion of cash basically drilling around the system. And
uh-huh.
the problem is that the big banks don't have the balance sheet capacity to handle it. So,
uh-huh.
you know, they're turning away big deposits. And
yes.
incidentally, Basel III says we don't favor big corporate deposits because they can walk out the door at no notice whatsoever and, you know, leave a bank in trouble. So, you know, there is every reason why big banks don't want large corporate deposits. So consequently, we have a situation where, you know, a bank might not turn away a deposit, but turn around and say, well, you'll have to pay us interest if we're going to take it on our balance sheet.
It's crazy.
You know, yeah. which is negative rates. So
yeah.
this is why the repo, the reverse repo market has been activated so strongly. I
mm-hmm.
mean, they've absorbed, in rough terms, about $1 trillion, if you like, of cash in the system to try and keep rates where they want it, which is sort of zero to I don't know, 0.25% or whatever the FOMC target is. So that is the rock and the hard place in one aspect. Another aspect of it is that, of course, they require a perpetual bull market. And we now have a problem that all the money printing over the last few years, and particularly in the last year, is now leading to rising prices. I mean, firstly in commodities, and it's feeding through into high street prices. Now, this basically means that at some stage, sooner or later, and I think it's going to be very soon, interest rates are going to have to rise. Mm-hmm. What happens then? The bubble in the equity market pops. What does the Fed then do? It can't cut its QE. It would have to increase it. Instead of 120 billion, it's going to go up to 200 billion. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't stop it, 300 billion. So you can see where they've got themselves. There is no exit for the Fed out of this difficulty that I can see.
So it has to keep printing more and more money to keep rates suppressed and to keep equities elevated, or else the whole thing just implodes, right?
Yeah, it's particularly to keep financial markets elevated. And we're talking about bond yields down, equity prices up. Uh-huh. That is why the pension funds and the insurance funds get between them $120 billion a month from the Fed in exchange for U.S. Treasury debt and agency debt.
Mm-hmm. With just a couple of minutes left, then, what we're looking at is really very much akin, as you've explained before, to the Mississippi bubble. It seems as though the Fed has to keep buying treasuries in ever-increasing amounts to try to perpetuate the myth that everything is fine, everything is okay. Otherwise, but eventually, I mean, we had a 5.4% CPI today. What does that do to our real interest rates right now? And tell us real quickly why you think foreigners are going to start dumping treasuries, because I think that's the key here.
Well, if you're a foreigner and you see that you're getting zero interest on your deposits and you begin to think, I need to protect my profits in the equity market, then, you know, you're already, if you like, in the sprinting blocks to get out. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. And there's about 31 trillion, incidentally, I think it's 31 trillion of foreign money invested in financial assets and cash deposits in the banking system. This is, not a trivial amount.
I would say that's right. 31 trillion. It was not a trivial amount. Alistair, we'll have to leave it go at that. Thank you so much. Folks, you do need to go to Gold Money, go to that research page, go there, read what Alistair has to say in great, we just don't have the time for him to reflect on all these important issues, but go there and you'll be able to understand in greater depth what Alistair's talking about on these points. So thank you so much for being with us again, Alistair.
My pleasure.
Folks, that is it for this week. Next week, John Rubino, Michael Oliver, and John Watson of NV Gold will be with me. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
NV Gold Corporation, trading under NVX on the TSX and NVGLF on the OTCQB, is a gold exploration company focused on uncovering the next multi-million ounce gold deposit in Nevada with an aggressive exploration season ahead in 2021, a tight share structure, strong management ownership, key strategic investors, a globally recognized technical team, report coverage from industry gold experts, and a strong treasury. Visit NVGoldCorp.com to learn more on this exciting story.